you know, if we go back 10 to 15 years, you know, the real talk would have just been doing verberate application of inputs. You know, obviously fertility and Lyme would be at the forefront of that as we look in the U.S. and then seeding coming on board about that time as well. And that would have been somewhat our most innovative application of technology on the farm is we make a prescription, you know, based on whatever data and information is available. And we go out there and we run our verberate technology. Obviously, guidance systems were pretty mature at that time. So those are being used. And, you know, 10 years ago, we really saw a big flip from even what we used to call light bars to auto guidance, right? I mean, you go back to 2012, I think. So just 12 years ago, 13 years ago, I would tell you this, 2012, in my opinion, I was out there where you're at today and seeing what companies were saying at the Farm Progress show there at Boone. And that was where everyone said, kind of put a stake in the ground and said, you know, we're moving away from just this typical precision ag technology and moving more and trying to digitize agriculture.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Mark Licht, Associate Professor and Extension Cropping Systems Specialist at Iowa State University. Please subscribe to our channel to receive notifications of new episodes. Today I have on this episode John Fulton from The Ohio State University, where he is a professor and has built his career around precision agricultural technology. Today we're going to spend much of our time talking with John about drone applications and AI, or artificial intelligence. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Let's start by just having you tell us about your academic and career path. I always find this, you know, quite interesting. You know, and really, I think some of our listeners do, too, as we have young listeners that are getting into the field.
Well, I grew up on a truck farm. At one time, we were about 3,500 acres and growing about, 35, 36 different crops at the time. That also included corn and soybeans as kind of a rotational crop with where we were planting vegetables. But went to University of Kentucky, spent several years there, both as a grad student and full-time kind of technician, running research projects, primarily, as you mentioned, in precision ag, but we were working with ag econ, agronomy, engineering, there's a variety, but kind of helping all those faculty members with a field scale to plot scale type research that we were doing. And graduated there in 2003 with my PhD and had the opportunity to go to Auburn University and be on faculty down there. It was a wonderful time and down there, but that's really what opened my eyes to fertility management and practices. I mean, when you talk about the number of crops, it wasn't a Midwest mentality where we only had two crops. You know, we were working with growers that might have five to eight different type of crops and down there. So that was really an educational experience beyond just doing my research extension and teaching at the time. And then Ohio State gave me an opportunity in 2014. They wanted to build out a precision ag, or what we call digital ag today, at least at Ohio State, but build a program there and gave me a really good opportunity. So came here to Ohio State and have been here since. And, you know, like a lot of us, we carry three-way appointment where I teach, do research, and extension, all three. So give my 330% of my time. So
well, that's quite fascinating. And you've narrowed the number of crops down as you've progressed in life, right? You went from, what did you say, 35 to 36 down to 5 to 8. And now you're, what, 2 or 3 or 4 maybe?
Yeah, 2 primary, as you know, here in Ohio, but obviously we have some other crops that have come in and see some diversity happening as markets open for our farmers. So, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Simplified in some respects, but more complex in others.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's jump right into drones and AI and how all this fits together. But maybe I'll have you start by, you know, really just talking about the evolution of fertilizer and pesticide applications over maybe just the last decade or something, and how we've gotten to the point now with AI and drones.
Yeah. So if we step back, let's say 10 to 15 years, Mark. I mean, you and I think kind of had a common path per se in terms of us age wise and stuff. But, you know, if we go back 10 to 15 years, you know, the real talk would have just been doing verberate application of inputs. You know, obviously fertility and lime would be at the forefront of that as we look in the U.S. and then seeding coming on board about that time as well. And that would have been somewhat our most innovative application of technology on the farm. Is we make a prescription, you know, based on whatever data and information is available. And we go out there and we run our verberate technology. Obviously, guidance systems were pretty mature at that time. So those are being used. And, you know, 10 years ago, we really saw a big flip from even what we used to call light bars to auto guidance, right? I mean, you go back to 2012, I think. So just 12 years ago, 13 years ago, I would tell you this, 2012, in my opinion, I was out there where you're at today, and seeing what companies were saying at the Farm Progress show there at Boone. And that was where everyone said, kind of put a stake in the ground and said, you know, we're moving away from just this typical precision ag technology and moving more and trying to digitize agriculture. And so all of a sudden we start to think, well, wow, we advanced to today, and we think of things like our harvesters, targeted spraying, what we're doing on the planter today. I mean, it's amazing. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we were thinking about, you know, breaking the planter in half possibly and driving it one half with a hydraulic drive and the other half. But today we have electronics and we're driving each individual row, both on the seeding, potentially fertilizer. I mean, those are the technology we have. And then obviously we have this targeted spraying in the last 2 to 3 years and what that's doing. And so 2012, I would always bookmark is where companies said, you know, we're going to digitize, we're going to move beyond just our traditional kind of precision ag technology. And what happened, hopefully everyone recognizes the name NVIDIA. We in that same time frame, really in 2016, so just right after that commitment in my mind, 2016, NVIDIA got to, you know, having these processors that all of a sudden gave us new capabilities, and not only here in agriculture, but across all, you know, industries and for all times of commercial. But it was really 2016, and not much after that. I mean, we went from it was like rocket speed in terms of what we could do on an individual chip. And then all of a sudden, wow, we can put that chip embedded in a machine or in a technology. Oh, we can add some cheap cameras. You know, you think about smartphones today and doing our just regular pictures, right? We use that even in our research when we go out and just start taking pictures because of the resolution and things. But my point is, in 2016 and just of recent, we've just exploded in terms of what we can do. I mean, you know, we can, what we call exaflops, if you've ever heard that before, it's multi-exaflops. I mean, that's... you know, people probably haven't even heard that, but it's quintillion operations per second that we can do. And all of a sudden, oh, wow, we can do all this stuff. And then we advanced to 2024, 2025 here. That's what enabled us to do things like automate some things on the harvesting machine. It makes adjustments based on the sensors and information it's seeing out there. We have tractors that are doing the same thing today. We have planner technology that's adjusting to the environment without us having to, you know, reset anything in a display. And so I think, you know, to that, what NVIDIA has done, obviously we have other companies, that's where we're at today. And obviously at the forefront of that now we can use things like artificial intelligence because of the ability to really process and take an image or whatever that sensor's feeding into that artificial intelligence and put it into either something that we can predict or something we can action immediately within very few milliseconds.
Yeah, it's a very, very rapidly growing technology, right? I mean, I think of, you know, if we just really focus down on, you know, drones, you know, we've really been using them in an ag setting for maybe 5 to 10 years. And a lot of that early years was imaging, right? And now we've really escalated into the point where we're making applications and we've got that technology right on board.
Absolutely. And trying to figure out today, how do we marry that up to be more efficient? And so how, you know, just as an example, if we want to scout the field and have a, you know, we'll say create a prescription, how do I take the images and then make a decision and then go out and in some cases use the drone itself to go out and either spray or apply some kind of granular product, whether that's, you know, possibly fertilizer, but I'm thinking more along the lines of things like cover crops and other granular materials that you see available to farmers today.
Yeah. So do you have research in this space with drones and AI? And can you explain how some of that's going and some of the things that are really on the forefront?
Yeah. So we have had a long history, and I say we, our digital ag team, going back to 10 years ago. And so go back to your original question. 10 years ago, you're right, we were looking at winged drones to, you know, copters and having imaging on board. There were several companies that were building new camera technology. And so we spent a lot of time, probably from 14 to 2018, looking at how do you do that at scale as well. So we had several companies. So we were scouting. We're trying to understand how you could do that at scale. And obviously today, you know, there's some companies that have grew out and provide real-time scouting with drones. About 2019, we probably, 2020, COVID years, you know, all of a sudden, real quickly, we started to see the spray drones. If you go back 7-8 years ago, all of a sudden, we had a couple companies that aren't around anymore that all of a sudden, well, we can spray with these things. And so we've been doing work on just understanding performance and setup. So, you know, if you called me, Mark, and you're, hey, I this is kind of my setup. I got a spray drone. It's got atomizers. You know, what are the things that are kind of best management practice? How should I set it up in order to have acceptable performance out there in the field? And so we're looking at a lot of that. And in the last 2 years, we really got into the granular application. It doesn't really matter what company today. If I buy, quote, a spray drone, I'm going to say, roughly speaking, $12 to $2,000, I can add on very quickly, basically take the tank off and snap on a dry spreader. And so what does that mean? How does that perform? Again, thinking about, you know, things like not only how fast the spinner disc should be spinning, but how do I calibrate effectively for different products? So in our case, Mark, the last 4 years, we've really seen a lot of spreaders being used to deliver cover crops in season. So I would roughly say from middle of August through October, an opportunity now for growers to have a tool where they don't have to drive something, you know, a high clearance machine with some kind of cover crop delivery system on it, or worry about trying to get a crop duster or such to come in and spread. But they got something that they can put their cover crops, get those emerged, and have, you know, try and maximize biomass, even, you know, once we get that crop off, but try and get it emerged prior to harvest and then have plenty of biomass before the frost date comes, you know, typically early mid-November, you know, for us. So We've done both a lot of spraying research and looking at the spreaders as well.
Yeah, you mentioned cover crop seeding, and you know, it's opened the doors for me in my research program in some instances, because I'm able to use a UAV to kind of do some of my seeding, or a drone to do some of my cover crop seeding. Whereas 10 years ago, I would either had to hand spread it or hope that I had a high clearance, you know, plot size equipment to be able to do that. So it definitely has come a long ways and opened the doors for those granular products as well as the liquid type products as well. It's quite interesting. And you mentioned the timing and placement, you know, just from what I've been able to see. Boy, you know, airplanes, there's a lot of, I'll say they're too far off the ground. And if you get into a windy situation, you get a lot of off-target seeding done with those, right? And at least from what I can see, the drones are a little bit better on the target. They can be a little bit closer down. Is that what you're finding in some of your research as well?
Yeah, and add on to what, you know, you're seeing as or observed as well. You know, you can get 100% of that field covered if that's really your whereas, again, depending on the size, shape, and then what, you know, if you got, you know, trees or other obstacles on the borders, you know, sometimes we may not effectively get cover crops or spraying in kind of those corners or some of the headlands. And so we can do, make sure that we get 100% coverage today with these drones. So, and we've found some other interesting, especially on the cover crop thing, some other interesting results that we just got out of here last year and this year. You know, one of the things, you know, a lot of times we're seeding into obviously a live crop, and sometimes it's, you know, pretty green. We did a project where we looked at seeding essentially same field. Now we were looking at what actually hit the ground. Okay. And so we put pans out across the fields, and then we did it at 100% green, 50% desiccated, and then ultimately, you know, harvest or fully desiccated. Interesting enough, you know, we get some interception obviously in corn, regardless of the stage it's in. But we got nice coverage in corn, even under our green, when it's green, the application. So we didn't see any differences. But what I would say is we do get some interception of those seeds. And a lot of times those seeds get caught in the collar. And so they never reach the ground and never can do. So and I can come back to that. The thing in soybeans we found that was really interesting is when you're at full canopy and it's a green canopy, we get a lot of funneling. And we did this in 15-inch and 30-inch soybeans. We did not do it in drilled soybeans. It's just not as common here in Ohio. But either 15 or 30-inch, what we saw when you had that green canopy is you get everything funneled to the center of that row. So that canopy acts like a funnel. And it wasn't until sometime around 50% desiccated that you actually got to see a lot more uniform application. So within, you know, underneath that plant or within the row, it was not until it was 50% desiccated. So my only thing is, like in soybeans, again, if you want to try and get a good, somewhat uniform establishment, you might want to hold off and make sure it begins to desiccate so you can get and penetrate that foliage and get it kind of underneath that plant. So when you are harvested, you get a lot nicer uniform application. And so that was something interesting we found, that just for people to think about when they're seeding cover crops with these drones.
So you mentioned the funneling pattern, or in corn, you had, you know, some of the seeds getting, you know, hung up in the, either the whorl or the, kind of between the leaf and the stalk, right? Does that translate back if, you know, we're using it for granular fertilizers? Do you think the same thing is going to happen?
Obviously, that would be true. You know, with fertilizers, the only hesitation, we did some work with fertilizers. The thing is the rates that you can apply. You just can't, you know, if I was doing a, you know, I'll say a late season type urea application that just, you know, bring more urea or more nitrogen, or the rates, I don't know that we got the capacity to keep up with the rates. Even if I was trying to do 50 pounds an acre, you know, that's that's a lot of flight. That's a lot of downtime and refill. It's just very inefficient. So I think we're going to, for me at least, or in the way we're thinking, we're going to have larger capacity in order to get to that, kind of using them more for fertilizer or kind of a rescue operation if we want to do that, and corn for nitrogen or something. I think we'll get there, but that's going to be a large machine in order to be able to be efficient. And so we're not, you know, up real quick and we're to cover the field, we're up and down over 100 times just to cover a field on fertilizer. So we got to be able to cover an acre or more with that. But yes, I that's something to consider. What we, we've got more work to do on this. What I would tell you, at least on the cover crops, if my target application, especially if I'm enrolled in a like an equip program or any kind of conservation program that's going to cost share my seeding, and they say, well, I need to apply, let's just say 20 pounds an acre, your target. Well, you need to put 20% more out there in order to meet that, is what we're finding. And that may come down. We may learn a little bit more. I'm just saying, conservatively speaking today, we recommend at least 20% over what your target is to meet whatever that program's required for you.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that at higher rates, you know, we're just not making much progress, right? You know, you're always stopping to fill and whatnot. So on the fertilizer side of things, I tend to think, well, it's going to be rescue applications or spot applications. Whereas on cover crops, now it's thinking about how low can we go to get effective coverage to meet, you know, the specs that we need to for cost share programs, things like that. I'm going to ask a question that maybe takes us a little off, but it helps us understand this a little bit, right? So right now, a lot of these UAV applications, you know, there's one or maybe two UAVs, but they're working independently of each other. Are other countries getting to the point where we do see maybe what I would term as maybe swarm technology, where you have a number of UAVs that are working in tandem with each other? To be able to do, whether it's spraying or fertilizers or cover crop seeding?
Yeah, so I would tell you today, at least all the drone manufacturers that, or drones offered here in the U.S. have already swarm capabilities integrated into them. Okay, they've already built in, and I'd have to go back and maybe it changes, but roughly speaking, they all have at least three or more that you could fly concurrently. So that's already here. That's here. And to your point, yes, we see other countries, in particular Brazil, some of what's happening. It varies with some of the European countries. Some of them you can't fly. Some of them you do. It's kind of interesting. But definitely see, we'll say, regulations not as strict as what's here in the U.S. for the agriculture community. And so in particular, Brazil. And so that's why you see a lot of companies doing their kind of research and development in those countries, because there's not as much paperwork and policy in play for them to do that work, do the research. So that's a concern of mine. I mean, that's something that when I've had the opportunity to talk to about drones is, you know, I obviously, and a heavy favor, we want to be safe with these. These things are getting big. I mean, the ones that are commercially available are pretty large, and we want to operate safely. So I'm not, but we see other countries really advancing and having different types of drones that have larger capacities already available to them. And my point in that is, you know, I'm not advocating use here in the U.S., but that can put us behind the eight ball long-term. I want our farmers, I want my Ohio farmers, if they so choose, to have access to the most recent and most advanced technology. Now, if they want to, but other countries, that's much more rapid advancement, larger and different drones that they have access to. And again, I'm not advocating drones as the solution. I'm just advocating here that we want to continue to be a leader in production agriculture. And these little things like this, especially on the technology side, really bother me when my farmers don't have access to some of the most recent technology if they wanted to use it. So, the thing about swarming, Mark, I would tell you through our research, as of right now, I would tell you with the current drones on the market, running two at a time with one pilot. So one pilot trying to operate two, that's a lot. I don't know. And I'm not saying there's not some folks out there that can do three, but to do that and wake up at get going. And like in my neighborhood, I'll see guys starting at 6 a.m. spraying fungicides and going through midday, if not further, but putting a full day in trying to run two drones, that's kicking it. And that's about the limitation right now. And so swarming can give us some more efficiencies, obviously. But I think realistically, we're not quite, we don't have the automation and support around them to be say, hey, I can take one pilot and fly 3 to 5 of them today. We're not quite there. We need to build some more automation in. That includes, in my opinion, refueling or, you know, putting new batteries in, refueling, I call it, to refilling or whatever we're doing. And once we get to that, and the pilot can focus on what's going on at the field and not have to worry about having someone there and, oh, I'm, you know, I got to hit, you know, hit the restart button to put it back up. Once we get over some of that, I think we can talk about three or more drones.
I suspect that technology is coming our way faster than we might expect.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what additional advancements are happening in AI or drone technology that are going to reshape corn and soybean farming over, you know, even just the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, I think you're going to see, obviously, we mentioned this, and I think everyone would know, we're going to get larger. We're going to have larger drones and that's going to give us more capacity. And maybe we're not talking so much about 2 to 3 gallons an acre as far as our rate on them. Maybe we can get that more on the 5 to 6. I think we're going to see companies come more and have labels for drones. These aren't ground machines, and they aren't the what we traditionally call aerial machines, the helicopters or the planes. They're something different. That they operate different. And normally we're roughly 10 foot above the canopy or above the ground. But we're going to see more labeling here, I think, hopefully in the near future. At least I got my fingers crossed. I do think we're going to see some softening of the policies. And to your point, we'll see more swarming happening. In terms of what we'll see, I think we're going to start seeing more. We'll start seeing some spot spraying and automated, more what I describe as more automated. Not right now. In my opinion, it's pretty clunky. I got to go out and I got to scout with the drone. Then I got to figure out, hey, I got to zip that shape file, let AI process things. I think we're going to see a lot more of that type of where I can scout. I can be more informed. We can do a lot more spot spraying type work. And the other area that I think that, surprising enough, that we'll see and I think will really help us in agriculture's delivery. You think about the number of days where I either got to get a part, I'm down in a field, I just need a few gallons of this or that to finish up a field. But, you know, rather than putting someone in a vehicle when we're having some labor challenges, why not use drones and deliver something directly from the dealership, deliver from the retailer or the retail store? So I think we're going to see more. We will begin to see drones positioned in 5 years, possibly, as delivery, you know, where you'll basically have what I describe as a drone in the box. And the parts guys not only, you know, are taking orders, but they're actually going out in a secured manner, putting that part on a drone. It's flying out to a dedicated location, and that's going to bring us a lot more efficiencies to me because we're not having to put someone in a vehicle and run, you know, parts or products or whatever we're trying to do for 2 hours. We can do that. And some of these newer drones that we've had to work with some companies on kind of business models around this, you know, we're talking about 50 mile radius. So, you know, you draw just around Ames there, 50 miles, you're covering quite a bit of, you know, area. And, you know, if I'm a, you know, retailer with multiple stores, shoot, I could, you know, take 2 or 3 stores and cover quite a bit of my clients. And so I think delivery is going to be something that will really help in agriculture as well.
Okay. As we run close to the end here, I want to really maybe refocus us just a second. We've been really focused on drones and how they fit into kind of a row crop, a corn soybean type of system. Are there other areas of this farm production system where we're really starting to see drones becoming a more important factor in management?
Obviously livestock, that would be something, especially for beef cattle or any kind of pastured animals, to be able to put drones can go out and do a quick, you know, we'll call it a scouting routine. They can even help with navigation of animals too. We've seen that as well. But you know, just those to me, it's livestock is where we'll see. I also think the other interesting thing that may happen is sampling. And that could be anything from water sampling. We could talk about tissue sampling, you know, and kind of your line of work, or taking even any kind of sampling. I think in time we're going to have the capacity, especially with AI, to do some things in real time that we just haven't thought about. And so, you know, obviously I'm not sure that we're going to see it do its soil sampling, but I think when we talk about crops and water and things of that nature, I think there's going to be some opportunities to really have some new technology that give us more intel and insights and make hopefully more informed decisions, if not more timely decisions in season of what we might need to be doing with the crops in particular. So, but water sampling is another one I don't want to forget about as we think about water quality and we think about drainage and things of that nature. I can very quickly implement something as a needed to collect samples as well.
Yeah, the future is going to bring us a lot of new ways to think about things. I think AI and just the analytical side that AI is going to bring to us is going to speed things up for us. And it'll be really interesting to see how this all comes together in the next several years.
And think about this, you know, again, just think about it. You know, we've used, you know, things like soil moisture sensors for years, and we've tried to make them, well, a lot more wireless connectivity to them so we can see monitoring. But think about putting the AI right there in the field too and be in real time. And as we advance our understanding of how to implement things like NIR as well and get kind of real-time assessment, a possibly real-time assessment of soil, maybe even soil fertility type, you know, conditions. I mean, think about that, Mark. Right now, maybe get once or twice a year to kind of understand what the fertility is out there in the field, right? But if we begin to have AI and kind of think about a smaller package, we might be able to do some monitoring and think more in season of what we could do to improve that crop and profitability of that crop.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Well, John, it's time for our final three questions. I'm going to jump right in with the first one is, you know, what is your go-to technical resource?
It's a great question. Today I get on a lot of I try and keep up with some of the farm chats and blogs, kind of what you're doing here. I think those are great resources out there and it keeps me up to date on what people are thinking or what's happening. And then obviously being a modern day, I use Copilot too to grab information and understand what's been happening as well. So it's kind of twofold. I still rely on reality, the people, you know, through blogs and podcasts, but also Copilot is what we have access to at our high state of understanding as well some other things happening.
Yeah, those are two very common things. And you know, the AI, whether it's Copilot or ChatGPT or, you know, Gemini, whatever, you know, those are becoming more mainstream and we're starting to see people use it to explore a little bit more. So with all you have going on, what do you do in your free time?
Well, my free time is either, well, mainly with our kids. We've got two kids that are teenagers. And so that takes up all the free time, which is great. Our kids are very involved. We do everything from showing cattle and goats to sports and horseback riding. And so that's pretty much our free time as our kids. And we really enjoy that.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I have two very active, teenagers, and they keep us hopping.
Yeah.
And then our last question is, where can our listeners go to learn more about the research and your extension program?
You know, number one, we do have a digital ag web page. We're about getting ready to get revamped on that here in 2026. We're having a refresh campus-wide, I guess you'd say. But we do have our digital ag webpage with a lot of resources and information. Our eFields program, which essentially is our on-farm research. We have an annual report. In fact, our 2025 report will be out here in about a week. But all that can be found if you just on your browser, type in eFields Ohio State. It takes you right to the page. You can see all those resources. And then we have an agronomic crops pages too that has a lot of the information about all the different disciplines, but what we have around, information around each of our major crops here in the state.
Yeah, I really appreciate your eFields and some of those other reports that you've got coming out. I'll have to look for that in the coming weeks.
Well, send me your address. I'll send you a hard copy.
Okay, sounds good. Well, that concludes another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
If you, our listeners, enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. Until next time, this is Mark Licht for the Crop Science Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.